Locked On Giants, your daily New York Giants podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, New York Giant fans, and welcome to another edition of Locked On Giants, part of the Locked On Podcast family, your team every day. Patricia Traina here with you. It is Tuesday. That means we have a Twitter Tuesday. So you know what's on deck. Great questions as always. So I do appreciate the questions before I start with them. Just a quick programming note. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to have the crossover program, Matt Derer. Is going to join us. He is the host of Locked On Lions. So he'll be on the program and we'll talk Giants, we'll talk Lions. And also coming up on the program this week, I'm going to have Mark Schofield, who is the quarterback guru for the Locked On NFL Network. And we're going to talk about what the Giants can do realistically to help Daniel Jones moving forward. Daniel Jones has had some struggles. So that is definitely coming up later on. At some point this week on the Locked On Giants podcast. All right, let's jump right into your questions. And again, thank you everybody who submitted them. We're going to start off with NH_Giants who asks, Shermer is known as a quarterback guru. That is one of the reasons why he was hired as Giants coach. Up to this point, what specific areas has Shermer made Eli and Jones better quarterbacks? That's a real good question, John. I don't know necessarily that Shermer has made Eli a better quarterback. I think Eli always was what he was. I guess Eli would probably say that he can learn something new. I guess you can always learn something new, but I don't know that Shermer, came in and, at least visibly speaking, and I'm going off of memory here, I'd have to go back and look at film, but I don't think Shermer per se fixed anything that was wrong with Eli. If anything, he had him maybe do some more rollouts, which weren't really a strength of his. But as far as Jones, I mean, I don't know that you can compare, that this is an apples to apples comparison, because Eli is a 16-year NFL veteran. Jones is a rookie. So if anything, Jones is the guy that you got to look at as far as how Shermer is making him better. And, some of the things obviously are going to be reading defenses, some technique, footwork and that sort of thing. That's probably the only area, just going back to the question about Eli, that I would say maybe you can make the argument for that. Maybe he fix some of Eli's footwork that Ben McAdoo had messed with when he was here. So, but otherwise, like I said, you're not really comparing apples to apples here. And so it's kind of hard to, I think, to give you a clear answer just based on memory like that. But anyway, Brendan J. Tully, do you think the O-line tackle or linebacker is a bigger priority in the offseason? Again, I don't know that it's apples to apples. I see both as being a top priority. I mean, offensive tackle, I would definitely look to get a young guy in there, especially, with Nate Solder struggling, Mike Remmers on a one-year deal. And, they were supposed to develop Big George, George Asafo Aji. And, of course, poor young man suffered the season-ending concussion. So I'm not sure, what the future holds for him. But yeah, I would say, linebacker, they probably have linebackers. So I would say maybe tackle is the higher of the two priorities. But, I would look to upgrade still up both positions if I'm the Giants. All right, next question comes from A.J. Atri. I hope I said that right. It was clear Arizona was running the ball in the first half. No adjustments by Shermer. Why? Well, first off, it was James Betcher to make the adjustments. Second off, you got to look at what they were doing, what the Giants were doing just about on every play is they were playing light. And by that, I mean, instead of lining up three defensive linemen, a lot of times they had two or in some cases, I think there were a couple plays where they just had one. And what that was designed to do was to stop Kyler Murray from, you know, burning them with his legs and the receiving game from, you know, exploiting them down the field. Now the trade-off is, you know, now you've got a running back and, you know, you don't have those big bodies stuffing the lanes and whatnot. And what happens is what we saw in the Arizona game. So I think it was a case of Betcher picking his poison. He probably figured, you know, David Johnson was injured. He probably wasn't going to, you know, they probably weren't going to pound the rock with him. Probably didn't anticipate Chase Edmonds doing what he did, but let that be a lesson to you. You have to, you know, you have to plan for everything. And hopefully, you know, Betcher has learned that. So, okay, next one comes from Molten Centra 81. Do you think this is the week Pat Shurmur finally gives the play calling duties to Mike Shula? Shurmur needs to concentrate on running the team properly during the games. Nope, don't think this is going to be the week. Not at all. Sorry. I think Shurmur is going to keep the play calling duties for the foreseeable future. I know that's not what a lot of you guys want to hear, but that's how I see it happening. Okay, next we actually got the same question from three different people. Riddick Fan, Matt Taki 983, and G-Man Mike 11. All asked basically the same question about Shurmur. Why should the Giants keep him? Will he be fired? Okay, he's not going to be fired this year, guys, and I would be very, very stunned if he is fired next year. I think it would take a McAdoo type of meltdown for Shurmur to get fired, and I just don't see that happening. All right, so why do I think that? Because the Giants specifically hired him, and I said this way back when they were interviewing head coaches, and I'm going to stick with this. The Giants knew at some point they were going to need a new quarterback, and I think they were looking for a guy who could develop the new quarterback. So I just don't see them bailing on Shurmur after 1 year, just regardless of the record, because, you know, it is a young team, it's a young defense, it's a young quarterback. I think Shurmur gets one more year to turn it all around. I think next year, you know, the argument's going to be, okay, look, Jones is in the second year of the offense. He, you know, presumably all these problems that he's having gets fixed. The defense will be another year advanced. They'll get some of the injured guys back. You know, they'll add some more pieces. That's what I think is going to happen. I think they're going to keep Shurmur through next year at the very least. If they don't turn it around next year, then I can see them maybe making a change at the head coach position. But I think he's definitely in it for at least another year and the rest of this year for sure. I know that's probably not what you guys want to hear, but that's kind of the reality of the situation. You're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traina. It is a Twitter Tuesday. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with more of your Twitter questions. The folks at Roman, a men's health company, are changing the game with Roman Swipes. Get $10 off your first order of swipes and free 2-day shipping at getroman.com/lockedonNFL. Welcome back to Locked On Giants. I am Patricia Traina. It is a Twitter Tuesday, so we are answering your questions and always appreciate hearing from you guys. And it's actually my favorite show of the week, to be honest with you, because it's an opportunity to talk back, get back a little bit, and answer your questions and give them, you know, more of a thorough answer or as much of a thorough answer as I possibly can. Whereas on Twitter, I'm actually limited to the number of characters I can type out. So I do thank you for submitting the questions. Continuing with your list of questions, Mikey Joe Drum says, after this weekend's game, the only question I have is an extensio one. Why? Well, why not? I mean, I don't know what you want me to say. Why not? I mean, it happens. You know, I don't mean to be, you know, dismissive of it, but, you know, I don't know what to tell you. Why could mean anything? So why not? All right, next question. Actually, a bunch of questions comes in from House of Havoc. Since Shermer will probably be back, your thoughts on Betcher being back? All right, let me actually answer these questions one at a time. So I'll start with that one. I do think that if there is going to be a change made, and that is a big if right now, because I think we'll see how the season goes, but if a change were to be made on the coaching staff, Betcher would be the guy I would keep an eye on. Now, there's two sides to this. Number one, if you're going to say, okay, look, you've got a young quarterback, so you've got to stick with the coaching on that side of the ball, you can make the argument and say, well, you know, this is a young defense, so you stick with Betcher and you give him another opportunity. But what I would want to see is I would want to see more consistency. I would want to see an upward trend. And I just don't see that right now. I mean, at some point, you know, coaches talk about putting players in the best position to succeed. And I don't know. I don't see that enough from this defense. And it just, some of what I've seen, it's just been mind-boggling, to be honest with you. So, but anyway, to answer your question, I think Betcher is the one on the hot seat. All right, continuing with House of Havoc, he asks, what's happening with BJ Hill and RJ McIntosh? I don't hear much about them at all. We have written about both of those guys over at Inside Football. I don't have the latest issue in front of me. I do know that we wrote about them. What I will tell you from what I do remember is with BJ Hill, one of the things we noticed in watching film is that a lot of what's going on with him is being governed by what's happening on the edges. In other words, teams are exploiting the Giants' edges. And if they could somehow funnel some of that action inside to Hill, we think he could be a little bit more productive than what he appears to have been. As far as RJ McIntosh, what I remember we wrote about him is, you know, he's had some plays in which he's flashed, you know, he's a rotational guy, hasn't looked too bad, but, you know, look, when you're on a three-game losing streak and you're struggling on defense, you know, it's hard to point to one guy as the problem. It's hard to point to one guy as being exempt from being the problem. So it's a group effort, and hopefully those two guys will continue to get opportunities and will continue to develop. And then the final question from House of Havoc in that thread is, what is your overall assessment as to what has happened and is happening with the offensive line? Quite simply, it looks to me, well, it's a combination actually of a couple things. Number one, Nate Solder isn't playing well. I don't know if there's an injury involved or what, but he's off to a really slow start, I think. I don't know why. I don't know if there's an injury involved or communication issues or whatnot, but he's just right now struggling for whatever reason. Now, with that said, I think a lot of also what you see to believe to be the offensive line, some of that is on the quarterback. Some of that can also be on the tight end. So, for example, there was a play where, and I'm trying to remember exactly where it was. I made a note of it, but I know there was a play in which Evan Ingram was supposed to help block, and he missed his block. And it looked like, on a quick glance, it looked like the sack was given up by Nate Solder, and that was not the case. There was also an instance, or a couple of instances actually, where Daniel Jones just held the ball too long. And you know, when you ask an offensive lineman to hold his block for more than like a second or two, you're asking for trouble. So part of it, yes, the offensive line does need to play better. I know Nate Solder struggled. I've seen struggles from Mike Remmers here and there. John Halapio a couple times has had some issues with getting pushed back. The two guards have pretty much played well, I think. But, you know, as a unit, I think they'll all agree that they could play better. But I also don't think that all the issues that you're seeing are solely on their shoulders. G-Man Scouts asks, where did Shermer's creativity go? Offense has been pretty bland over the last few weeks. No trick plays. I'm not sure what you expect him to do, quite honestly. I mean, there's been blocking issues, protection issues. There's some receivers are just not getting open. Golden Tate, you know, we wrote this in Inside Football. We made the observation that Golden Tate is wonderful along the sidelines, outside the numbers, but over the middle, you know, that's where they really miss Sterling Shepard. So you can only be as creative, I think, as the personnel you have. And certainly injuries have been an issue. And, you know, the Giants, look, next spring, they've got to get themselves a speed burner at receiver. They have Darius Slayton, who can be a speed burner, but they've got to add more speed at that position because they just don't have it, in my opinion. Next question comes from Nieves Martir. Shermer looks overmatched. Same goes for OC and DC. Do you think there is a way to right the ship, or will the Giants need to overhaul the coaching staff? I know I touched on this a little bit. I do think Shermer will be back next year for the reasons I mentioned in the first segment. I think, though, what could happen is Betcher could be in trouble if the defense does not turn it around. Again, it's a young defense. I understand that. But they also brought in all of his old Cardinal players. And really, other than Marcus Golden, who's really having a good year, have any of the other Cardinal players that Betcher has imported since he's gotten here done anything to make you say, oh, wow, that guy's a keeper? And I think the answer, we all know the answer to that. So I would say keep an eye on the defensive side of the ball, especially if that unit continues to struggle. Next up, we have JMO9890. How many of the sacks yesterday were on the O-line or Daniel Jones himself? And how have you seen the O-line this year? And what's their biggest weakness? Okay, I kind of touched on that second question before. Regarding the sacks yesterday on the O-line, I'll be honest with you, as I take this, I have not done the film yet. I will do the film. I'm taping this right now on a Monday night. I'm actually going to do the film Tuesday morning to look at some of that. There's also something else I want to take a look at on film for a film study. But I do know there were at least two that were not on the offensive line. There was one where Evan Engram missed the block. Or didn't, you know, hold his block long enough. I think Saquon Barkley also didn't get a good piece of his man. So there were two right off the bat that I would not put on the offensive line. There was a third one, I want to say in the second half, I want to say it was in the late third quarter, where Daniel Jones just held on to the ball too long and just made himself a sitting duck. But those are the three that come to mind, but I'd have to look the rest of the film to tell you that. And unfortunately, the timing's a little off here because I won't look at the film until Tuesday morning, which by then you will be hearing this podcast. So I do apologize for that. All right, you're listening to Locked On Giants with Patricia Traynor. We're going to take our final break, come back, and more of your questions. So stay with us. Welcome back, Giant fans, to Locked On Giants. Patricia Traynor here with you. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining me. It is a pleasure to be doing a Twitter Tuesday with you. And we're going to wrap up this final segment with more of your questions. We have a few from Twitter remaining and a few that came in via email. So let's get to them, starting with A. Garrison 22. Shermer, the last few weeks, has called plays and made decisions based off emotions. Let's see. How long before they try switching to the OC to calling plays? Adam, a couple of things. Number one, I don't think it's been based off of emotion. I think Shermer, at the time he's made these decisions, felt that they were the best calls at the time. And you know, I'm not saying I agree with the calls. Obviously, I had some questions about them as well, But I will say this much. I always remember a former player or a college player years ago when I was in college, a player telling me that every call is designed to work and that it comes down to execution. I don't know how much I believe in that anymore. At the time, I took that as gospel, but lately I haven't necessarily agreed with that because I think there are certain calls that, you know, just because it worked earlier in the game or just because another team did it to you doesn't mean that it's going to work, you know, for you. So I don't know, though, that Shermer's calls are based off emotions. And as far as the offensive coordinator, Mike Shula, calling plays, already talked about that. I don't think that's going to happen. It's Shermer's show to run. And, you know, right now he's got a young quarterback, and people have to remember something. You know, as long as he has that young quarterback, even more so, that's why they're going to leave him to call plays this year to hopefully give Jones opportunities and situations and whatnot that he can handle. So, you know, I'm sorry, guys. It's a pipe dream. You're not going to see the play calling duty stripped from Shermer. It would have to take a really significant meltdown for that to happen. All right. Up next, we have Empire PR Man, who's a regular question asker of the show. Ruben, shout out to you. Thank you for the question. What are the reasons for the worsening performance of the offensive line? Ruben, I think it's a combination. It can, you know, I touched upon this a little bit earlier in the program in the last segment, but I have a feeling that Nate Solder is not right physically. And I don't want to keep singling him out, but he has, you know, he's had his struggles this year. And I'm hoping that whatever he's got going on straightens out because, you know, I really believe that he's not a horrible player, but for whatever reason, he's just gotten off to a really slow start. Mike Remmers has had his struggles here and there. I think the Giants have had some problems coming up the middle as well. But again, I don't think that what you're seeing is all on the offensive line. It's a matter of, you know, Daniel Jones holding the ball too long in some cases. It's a matter of the tight ends and the running backs maybe not picking up blitzes as well as they could. So it's any number of things. And I think to sit there and say that all eight of Sunday's sacks were the result of the offensive line, I don't think that would be a fair statement or an accurate statement to make. So, all right, up next is Joe 677-69-103. Cards had a good running game. OL play, creative play calling, Giants can't seem to get holes open, pass blocking, etc., and fail to get Barkley involved in passing game. Fail to go along with Slayton, huh? Okay, so I guess basically, Joe, you're asking me why couldn't the Giants do what the Cardinals were doing? At least that's what I think you're asking. I don't know why Barkley wasn't involved in the passing game. The only thing I can think of is that maybe they didn't want to overtax that ankle. I know I had asked Shermer about that on last Wednesday. I had asked him about, you know, getting these guys back and would he manage their snaps. And he kind of looked at me like I had two heads. But look, I've seen instances where guys are coming back off of significant injuries that have cost them multiple weeks. And I've seen coaches limit their snaps. So I didn't think it was necessarily a bad question that I asked. But, you know, like I said, Shermer looked at me like I had two heads and said, in a nutshell, that if the guy was available, they were going to play, you know, as needed. So creative play calling, you know, you're comparing an offense. The Cardinals offense is kind of a college offense that's been adapted for the NFL. So I don't know that you can compare apples to apples here. Cliff Kingsbury, coming from the college ranks, deployed a lot of, you know, college concepts, that air raid offense, which you don't really see the NFL coaches run a whole lot of. You got to look at personnel differences. You've got to look at, you know, injuries. I mean, there's so many different elements. I'm not trying to make excuses for the Giants. Certainly, they could have called a better game. They could have played a better game. But you can't do a straight apples-to-apples comparison and say, well, this team did it. Why didn't the other team do it? It's just there's so many different elements, personnel, philosophies, injuries, you name it, you know. The other thing you can look at is the Giants defense basically, you know, look at the scheme they played. They, like I said in the first segment, they basically played a, what they call a light defense where they didn't have a lot of their defense alignment on the field for a lot of plays and the Cards were able to run right up the gut. So, you know, just so many different elements. Okay. Now we get to some questions that were sent in via email. Starting with one from Anna A, who asks, who would be the person to give Shermer feedback or suggestion on his failed challenges? Anna, I think he has coaches upstairs in the press box that do that. I don't remember off the top of my head who those coaches are, but usually, you know, he has an eye in the sky who will give him some suggestions. Now, with these pass interference ones, you probably want to have somebody on the sideline who's really looking, especially across the field. I don't know if that's necessarily a practical possibility because, you know, that person would have to move up and down the field. But yeah, as a rule, they have an eye in the sky who helps them. Now, as far as, you know, clock management, that I believe that he has a couple of assistant coaches. I don't know who those guys are, but I can tell you that Shermer just doesn't arbitrarily, you know, make these decisions without consulting with somebody to get their feedback. Okay, up next we have a question via email from John G. What are your thoughts on using a sixth lineman, presumably Gates, on pass plays? I think the Saints have started to do that. John, I have, I don't think it's a bad idea, but the problem with that is when you start using a certain personnel grouping for a specific play or two, you're tipping your hand. And I always go back to 2007, one of my favorite years, by the way, to have covered Giants football for more than one reason. And the running joke was every time we saw Madison Hedgecock, the fullback, come out on the field, everybody and their uncle knew that it was going to be a run play because his presence tipped off what they were going to do. And 99% of the time, that's indeed what they did. So if they use a sixth lineman on the field for passing plays, they're going to tip off, I think, what they end up doing. So I would not necessarily be in favor of that. Now, would I be in favor of using a sixth lineman for, you know, in the jumbo package for short yardage or goal line? Absolutely. But not necessarily, you know, just every time they were lining up the pass. I think at that point, you know, you've got to get your running backs to play better. You've got to get your tight ends who are help blocking to do better. You've got to get your offensive linemen to play better. So, and also would help if your quarterback's internal clock were to speed up. So just a bunch of different elements and we'll see what the Giants decide to do, but that would be my take on it. All right, and then up last, we have actually a few questions here from Steve and Gina, who are also regular listeners to the show. Thank you guys for writing in and, of course, for listening. All right, so they asked about, let's see, everyone talks about all three phases of the game, but it's really four phases, that fourth phase being coaching and play calling, and we feel that they're falling down. What's your take on the play calling and coaching? I haven't been crazy about it. I do also understand that they are working with a young group, but I think what bothers me most about the play calling and coaching on the defensive side of the ball is I just don't see them adjusting. And, you know, actually, let me back up a little bit. The thing that bothers me the most about the job the defensive side of the ball is doing is I just get the impression they are coaching scheme rather than fundamentals. I mean, I watch this defense every week and I see missed tackles. I see guys who aren't in their gaps. I see guys who take poor angles. I see miscommunications. I see, you know, interceptions that they should catch, but they drop. And I say to myself, what are they doing in practice to address these fundamentals? You know, the coaches talk about fundamentals. The players talk about fundamentals. We're not seeing that on a consistent basis. And that would be my biggest question and my biggest issue with the coaching staff and as to what they're doing to fix this. All right, let's see. Steve and Gina also ask, are we making the most of Saquon and Daniel? Well, I mean, you know, Saquon right now is injured. You know, he's still not 100% even though he's out there. So I don't know necessarily if they're making the most out of him. I mean, he's not used very often in the passing game, which I think he should be, but I don't know if that ankle is going to preclude them from doing so. As far as Daniel, Daniel's got to learn how to read defenses, especially these more complicated defenses. He's coming along. He's going to, you know, obviously get better as we go along. But right now, you know, he struggled. He's kind of hit a little bit of a ceiling, but I'm confident he's going to bust through that. Why don't we run screens? I don't know if you guys have noticed, but the offensive line blocking and you know, it's not always been sharp. So that could be part of it. Why did Shermer used to roll Eli out of the pocket, but not Daniel? I think you guys better go back and look again because they have rolled Daniel out of the pocket. And then finally, a rules question, apparently. So they asked super basic question. What is the difference between encroachment and offside? Or is it just a ref's call as to what to call it? There's actually a difference. Encroachment is when a member of the defense crosses the line of scrimmage and touches a member of the offense before the ball is snapped. Offsides, on the other hand, is when a member of the defense crosses the line of scrimmage and doesn't touch a member of the offense. So that is the difference between encroachment or offs and offsides. Kind of looks the same, but it's a matter of one guy, you know, touching somebody or making contact versus not making contact. So I hope that answers your question. All right, folks, that should do it for this week's Twitter Tuesday questions. Some great questions as always. Thank you everyone for tuning in. Thank you everyone who submitted questions. Always a pleasure hearing from you. Remember, if you have a question you would like to submit for Twitter Tuesday, you can send them to me at Twitter at Patricia_Traina. Please, guys, tag them, Ask P-Train. It's the easiest way for me to find all the questions, given the amount of mentions I get in my timeline. If you would rather email the questions to me, you can send them to LockedOnGiantsPodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget, tomorrow we have the crossover show, and we're going to also have Mark Schofield on the program as well. So lots to still to come on the Locked On Giants podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.